And we're here now to do the year in review, local news, and we have a room full of journalists here. In fact, if somebody wanted to bomb the room, they'd wipe out half the reporting corps of, of Sandpoint. But we have with us two reporters from the Daily Bee, Evie Seberg and Lauren Reichenbach. Is that pronounced correctly? Okay. And publisher of the Sandpoint Reader, Ben Olson. And we're going to run through what we think are were the biggest stories in 2023. And then towards the end of the show, we want to come back and talk about what we think might be the big stories in 2024. And of course, I'm joined here at the mics by Jack Peterson.
And good morning, Chris.
Yes. Thanks for being here. This is going to air. We're recording this in advance of the Wednesday show when you're listening to this at first opportunity. We're also going to replay it again on the Friday show. So this is our wrap-up for the morning show and the news of the week for North Idaho. Well, Ben Olson, you came with the biggest, most robust list.
Yeah, was I the only one that prepared? Come on.
Well, here's my list. It looks kind of puny compared to yours.
No, the secret is that Zach Hagedorn did it all for me last night.
Yeah, cool. Well, Ben, why don't you lead out? What would you identify as? Let's start out with just a few of the biggest stories of the year that you saw, and then we'll come back to Evie and Lauren as well to tell us supplement. How's that sound?
Sure. I mean, it's there are so many stories out there that were big, and I don't know whether to start chronologically or you know, based upon what made the most impact. But I think just overall, if we focus in on the county. And really the name of the game there is dysfunction, I think, in 2023. You know, Asia Williams and Luke Ahmet joined the commission in January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it started off all right, you know, getting to know each other and the business of the county continued to get done. And, you know, it just started going off a cliff towards spring, summer. I mean, by summertime... there was a protective order issued against Steve Bradshaw
by Asia
for alleged threats that Bradshaw made. And, you know, now there's a Bonner County Sheriff's deputy watching over the room, including executive sessions, which has led to body cam videos filming those executive sessions. And on top of all that, there's, you know, the same 12 to 15 people, citizens that go to these meetings and, you know, throw wrenches and ask lots of questions, which is great to have an informed and, you know, active public. But it all kind of combines together to form this dysfunction that I've seen in Bonner County, that it's the worst I've seen since I've been covering it. And yes, the business of the county is getting done, but I think we're leading up to some, you know, some ugliness in 2024 if it keeps at this pace, really. Mm-hmm.
Let's bring Lauren in on this because Lauren, this is your beat as well.
Yes.
What's your observation? Would you rank this first as one of the biggest stories of the year for our local people?
Yeah, I think Ben took a lot of the words right out of my mouth, especially dysfunction. Yeah. I think that is a great way to describe the county and county politics right now. I think there's just a lot of tension between everyone, and from my observations, it doesn't seem like anyone is really willing to put aside their ego and to really try to fix the situation. So I definitely agree with Ben that I think it's going to ramp up in the new year to a whole bunch of new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so county dysfunction, which we can expect to continue. Now, one thing that just happened was they approved some new rules for conducting the meetings. Do you guys think that's going to help?
No.
No.
I think it came with good intentions, but I think it's only making the public angrier, and I think it's going to lead to more issues rather than resolving them, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of the things that it does, it kind of specifies the way the public can make comment, right?
Mm-hmm. And they don't like that.
They can't comment on agenda items now, and I guess I'll say that, you know, there's not one source of blame here when it comes to this issue. It's It's not one person on the commission. It's not one member of the public. It's this perfect storm just swirling around each other. And the more the public is restricted from commenting, the more, frankly, the more idiot comments come out. And it's frustrating as a journalist when you want to cover this straight and you just want to tear your hair out after watching this for 4 hours. You're seeing people being paid, you know, six figures a year to just to have Festivus every week, grievances. You know, they just air grievances, they yell at each other, they yell at the public yells at them. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? I could yell. I could do this.
Well, here's the function that you guys serve is that you save the public from having to sit through that. You can summarize it in a story, and the rest of us don't have to go and experience all the what's going on in that room. But anyways, that's, I think, a pretty unanimous choice for one of the big stories of the year. Ben, give us another one.
You know, something that I saw a lot back in the day, years and years ago, you know, the county has always been under a microscope, but I feel like the city of Sandpoint has been brought under that microscope now too, where there's a lot of Sandpoint residents who are expressing dissatisfaction with the way the city is run. Everything from, you know, the curve resurfaced, the zombie curve just kind of came up out of the dead again this spring.
And that's the plan to use what's currently the bike path to route traffic around 5th and Pine.
It started as the curve. I think it was 2013. It was finally, you know, quote unquote, laid to rest. But it was just this big redesign to join 5th Avenue North all the way to Highway 2 going west. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people were like, where did this come from? This has been dead for a decade. And, you know, I heard countless people just angry about the fact that it's been brought back, about the kind of tone deaf way in which the city presented it to Sandpoint. And ultimately it was shelved again. It wasn't gotten rid of because it's still in the comp plan. But
the city did buy the Dubs property.
They did.
Yeah. So their city's kind of laid the groundwork to do something there.
I think the biggest news on that, Zach just went to this ITD presentation at the Kiwanis, and I think the biggest, quietest news on that was the ITD spokeswoman. She was talking about essentially how they're not going to bring this up again. They don't want it. It's a hot potato unless the city of Sandpoint is a unified front that actually, you know, says we want this again. They don't want to touch it, which kind of, you know, it goes against what City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton was saying, which is essentially like, hey, we have to do this. I found that a little disingenuous after hearing the ITD spokesperson saying, nope, we don't want to do this until Sandpoint wants us to do it. So who's driving the bus there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and this issue does go back many years, really, when the curve was originally proposed, and I think we had Mayor Carrie Logan at that time, and she put the kibosh on it at that point. It's like, let's leave it as it is. It's going to entail this huge intersection at Pine and Boyer is where it would be, right in front of Dubs.
Kind of like Euclid Boyer. I don't know what they were going to do there, but they're going to take that railroad grade there and stretch it across.
Anyways, it became apparent that it posed some huge issues for pedestrians to get across the five or six lanes that they were proposing there. So that kicked things off for the city at early in the year when they started talking about that, and then other city things came up. Maybe Evie, this is kind of your beat, right?
Yes.
So, what were some of the other city things? I mean, we evolved into elections, and issues came up with Traverse Park, the downtown waterfront plan. I mean, there's all kinds of big stories that came out of the city.
Yeah, I think Traverse Park was a really big one. A lot of pushback. I was talking to my boss this morning about when has that happened in Sandpoint before? What kind of Is this common or is this
where
bizarre?
We have protests, people waving signs, and
And the one thing she brought up was the annexation project in 1995, saying that a lot of people were really pushing back against that. And it's funny because during that, a council member had to step down. And similarly with Travers, you have kind of a similar pattern where there's a lot of protests, not for the same reasons, that the council member stepped down. But I think, I think that was big and led to Grote's resignation. I won't say that it did because he never technically said those words, you know, I'm resigning over Travers. But he did talk about Travers and then resign. So I think that was implied. But I know that's kind of a touchy subject at the city. And I think that was a big thing, too. That doesn't happen very often either. You know, I think the last resignation was in 2013. Those are some of the stories I see as largest.
And the point of contention was they're building the James Russell Sports Center there.
Yes.
And it was the location. Interesting thing about that is it had been planned for over a year to put it there. Actually, longer than that. The Travers Park plan, the master plan for the park, called for an eventual indoor facility there someday. And that plan was made multiple years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. And
when they began considering it, at first they were going to put it right where the current tennis courts are.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a bunch of pushback from the tennis community, said, don't take away these courts and build something on top. Let's move it. So the city council did listen to that first bunch of feedback they got. They moved it. And the interesting thing is that this didn't get activated as a issue until it was already approved, during the discussion leading up to it. So I don't know if there's a lesson for the public there. It's like, get involved a little earlier.
that's a common thing with the public. You know, you can't fault the city completely for the Travers or Parkalypse, as Zach called it.
There we go.
Because the people need to be involved. They need to read these stories early and get involved early and let their opinions be known early. That being said, there were several people that spoke up at city council meetings early on in this process. You know, Mayor Shelby Ronstadt often discounted what they said, you know, vocally to their face. And I think a lot of times the council doesn't really listen to the public as much as they should. But the public needs to put this level of opposition well forward of what they do now, because you know it's you're complaining about something that's already happened. You're wasting your time, unfortunately. But a silver lining is I feel like after those protests and the chaining to the tree and everything, I saw the city councilors and I saw the city staff listen a little bit more at their following meetings after that. And I feel like if that's the only thing you can take away from this, That's a good win for everybody, because we need an open line of communication between our residents and our representatives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another issue in the city that was turned out to be well discussed and a lot of feedback on it was the downtown waterfront plan, and that actually started as a design competition, which was an interesting way to take on a planning project. Give us the short version of what that news story was. Why don't you jump in on that again, Evie?
Okay. Yeah. So to kind of create an aligned vision for the downtown core, the city put on the waterfront design competition, which invited different teams to contribute their design ideas. It's basically like, I think of it like a mood board. It's ideas to help the city move forward, kind of reference as far as aesthetic, historical preservation, what kind of projects do people really want to see. Anyway, they kind of did an elimination process, had their teams participate, then eventually took it down to, I think, 3 teams, and then chose from there. And then that team, which is GGLO, will kind of help the city, or has been helping the city, just craft this plan I guess they're not necessarily calling it a plan as much as just like a I forget what the word they used for it was, but it's ideas. So, and that's in the works now. They've kind of approved the last plan, and then they're kind of using that to move forward in the new year with future projects.
And the feedback on it that was that a lot of people just didn't like specifics in the plan. Yeah,
I think it was, for a lot of them, the view they saw of Sandpoint and some of these images, especially with the other teams. I think the reason GGLO was chosen was because it did most resemble what people who have lived here for a long time want to see. The other ones were a little more modern, a little more, I mean, not entirely, but some of the ideas were just a little more fantastical, I think. And this kind of, I think, kept people down on the ground. And I do think there were people who were frustrated with the expense of it too, you know, because each of the teams that were like preliminary still were awarded quite a bit of money. And I think that was frustrating to a lot of citizens when they could use that money for the projects that they're going to be implementing because of the design competition. So I would say that's where a lot of the pushback came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember an email I got from somebody when they were announcing that from a guy, and I thought it was really well put. And he said, why are we paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to these out of town design firms to tell us the character of our own town? And mm-hmm. I feel like that was the line that resonated to me with a lot of the pushback against this. A lot of people like it. A lot of people are against it, but I feel like at heart, it's this kind of model of spending a lot of money of the cities, of spending a lot of money in the planning process, which hasn't always been the case in Sandpoint government. You know, we've had department heads and stuff that that have streamlined that process a little bit differently before, but now we're front loading a lot of our costs with these designs and these proposals and these plans. And so, yeah, there were definitely some pushback on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what else is on your list, Ben? You got you have a good variety of things on your list.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not boring living here. If you just moved here hoping to find some quiet little retreat, you better keep looking.
Surprise.
Yeah. I think it wasn't a Sandpoint specific story, but I think the whole drama at West Bonner County School District was one of the bigger stories. I mean, it made national news. It's still making national news with the. Just to break it down in a nutshell, there was the board of trustees ended up hiring Brandon Durst, who's kind of a wonky, like, political activist from Boise, used to be a Democrat, ran as representative, changed parties, and now he's kind of on the, further right fringe of the Republican Party. And a lot of residents in West Bonner were a little... miffed at that, to say the least, because Brandon Durst, also brought with him a lot of ideas of curriculum changes and wide sweeping changes to the district. And, a lot of the staff were let go. And then, he hired as his clerk, the wife of a very active far right activist named Dave O'Reilly. And people just kind of saw their school district being taken a little bit further away from them, and ultimately led to a recall election with Keith Rutledge and Susan Brown, was it? They were both removed from office, which is a big deal. Mm-hmm. You don't see people being actively removed from office that much. I don't know when the last one was, to be honest.
By a pretty healthy margin. I don't remember the exact vote, but it wasn't even close.
Yeah, it was 60 to 30.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they cleaned house and got rid of the two trustees that they felt were responsible for that. A lot of people asked why they keep Troy Reinbold, because he was the third vote to bring Brandon Durst on. And and Reinbold actually served a purpose in the struggles of the meetings, because he just wouldn't show up occasionally, multiple times in a row, and that would mean the quorum wasn't there and they couldn't actually have a meeting. So the district was in kind of a weird stalemate for a month or two. Mm-hmm. And eventually, Durst announced that he was going to resign. And now they have an interim superintendent. The ship has been righted a little bit back, floating again, but it was a long debacle. And I think the thing to take away from that, as with a lot of these stories, is the community rallied together. Republican, Democrat, centrist, they all kind of rallied together for the sake of their kids' education. Mm-hmm. And I think that story showed me that there's a third rail of politics in Bonner County, and that's don't mess with the schools, mm-hmm. Which is heartening, I think, to actually know that we have a cliff somewhere. Mm-hmm. How far can we go off of it? Well, that's the cliff right mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good way to put it. And like you mentioned, that's a story that got bounced around the whole country. Yeah.
I just read something in Vanity Fair about it last mm-hmm. week. I mean, they had a huge story about it. Mm-hmm. Really well done story.
Mm-hmm. Another story that got bounced around the whole country was Bonner General Health discontinuing their obstetrics care. And one of the stated reasons was because Idaho had very restrictive abortion policies now. And they can't even get the doctors because it's difficult to for doctors to provide the kind of care that they might want to for mothers that are having kids and have a threat of a lawsuit hanging over their head as the law currently provides for. I don't know. Did you guys cover that?
I didn't cover that.
Okay. That Ben, I know the reader did cover.
Yeah, we had a lot of coverage on that. We saw this despair in people after that story came out. You know, we had a close friend who was just getting pregnant at that time, or she was a couple months pregnant, and I just saw the look in her eyes. All of a sudden, her OB is not going to be her OB. You know, she has to go figure out a new birth plan. And, you know, a lot of people were figuring out trips to Coeur d'Alene to, you know, to have their visits and have the birth plan there and exploring having a midwife, you know, at one of the facilities in town. And it really kind of showed, it was a conclusion to a lot of this push, you know, against by the legislature, especially about making these abortion bans and rules. It was kind of a manifestation of that. You know, you saw what really happens when, you know, when we pass laws of that nature. And you're seeing it in Texas now with that Katie Cox, right. Not to be confused with Sandpoint's Katie Cox.
But a gal that had to leave the state. Yeah. Because she had a pregnancy that was endangering her life and the fetus was not viable, but she couldn't have the abortion there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the judge ruled that she could. And then the lieutenant governor said, nope, we're going to arrest you and your husband and the doctor. And so it's just, I feel like that's what a lot of people were fearing here in Sandpoint when they heard that BGH was closing their OBGYN. Yeah, it's still reverberates. People are still kind of upset about that whole thing.
And that it did get national, even international. The Guardian had a big story on it in the UK about that particular, that specifically about Bonner General Health and the situation here with our obstetrics care. I know Bonner General Health is really looking for ways to restore that kind of care here, and it. Part of it is all wound up in insurance policy and those kind of needs for the hospital to be able to get insurance that they need for their doctors. So we'll see what happens in this next year. It could be that a different level of care comes back there.
Yeah.
So, okay, another topic, big in 2023.
I've got a big one. The Darcy Smith investigation release. The whole thing, I guess, started in 2022, which was long before I got here.
So this is at the fairgrounds now.
Yes, at the fairgrounds because of alleged fraud that may or may not have happened last year. And the investigation was released, I think, earlier, like late spring, early summer. And it caused a lot of contention in the county, which we totally needed more of that. But a lot of people were saying that it seems very incomplete. It doesn't seem to really have any solid proof of yay or nay, she did this, she didn't do this. And a lot of people are saying, yes, the investigation's done, like, everything's closed, let's move on. And then a lot of people are saying, no, that's not what happened. Like, a lot of this is very, like, flimsy. It doesn't really prove anything. And so even now, like almost weekly at the commissioners' meetings, where we have people standing up talking about her and the case. And I know at the fair board meetings, a lot of times they're talking about her, asking for justice. And I'm not sure if we're ever going to get to that point because of all the other confusion and all the other parts that fit into it to make it complete.
Mm-hmm. And tragically, Darcy took her life as this investigation was kind of getting started. Her accusations
were about a
financial malfeasance. It's a complicated case. Speaking about the fairgrounds, I mean, part of the kerfuffle there was over an RV park. Mm-hmm. That was planned, and the sheriff was really opposing that. Fair Board itself, even though the county had secured a $400,000 plus grant to put in an RV park, the sheriff came out against it, and the Fair Board itself came out against it, right?
Yeah. That was really interesting. I started working at the Bee right in the middle of it, right around like when phase two of the project started. And what was interesting to me was, as I was reading up on history about it, it seemed like there was no pushback throughout all of phase one when they were, I believe it was just like fixing the parking lot, making it better and everything. And then a lot of pushback came out of nowhere during phase two. And that's when the Fair Board released their statement saying that they were denying the grant, which legally doesn't do anything, but it makes the county look really bad for the people who were giving the grant and everything. And all of the contention made construction get pushed back and delayed, which ended up causing the county to lose the grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess wherever you fall on that particular issue, that Luke Ahmet, the county commissioner, was really a proponent for getting the RV park there because it could provide income for the fairgrounds, which in a certain sense certainly seems like not a bad idea right there. And most recently, the county approved an audit. So you can kind of, as part of that whole fairgrounds kerfuffle there. So now that's another thing that's happened. Yeah,
it's difficult too because a lot of residents are requesting that the county approve previous year's audits for the Fair Board. But the Fair Board is claiming that they don't have any financial documentation that would allow those audits. And a lot of residents are saying, that's not true. Something shady is going on. But the county can only go off of what information the county has. So it's kind of a limbo right now, whether they will even be able to do any kind of previous audits or whether they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't sound like they're going to right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to look too far back. I guess it comes down to the whole sunken cost thing. Do you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to figure out how you might have been frauded out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or do you just let it lie? I think that's the question there. Swirling around this story, though, are also these lawsuits by the deputy prosecutor, Scott Bauer. He's got, you know, I think four separate lawsuits against the county for various reasons. Michael Rosedale, the Bonner County clerk, he's also got a lawsuit. It's really tough to write these stories because they're nitpicking every single detail of what we write. And they're, you know, a lot of times I feel like they're trying to litigate their case through the media coverage. And it's frustrating because, you know, we cover a lot of things as journalists, but we are not intricately involved with these stories like they are. And this Fair Board investigation and RV park and lawsuits, it's a storm within a storm, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah, storm within a storm. A layer in the onion of county politics, I guess. So if you're just tuning in, this is the morning show and news of the week on 88.5 KRFY. And we're talking today with three of our local journalists, Abby Seberg, Lauren Reichenbach, and Ben Olson. And we're doing a year in review of the biggest stories in 2023 here in Sandpoint and Bonner County. So, Ben, what else you got as a big story of the year?
It was a pretty big story of the spring, and therefore that's part of this year, so yeah. This will go.
Yeah.
There was a lot of national attention in the spring, especially in the winter, spring, into summer, about, you know, the book banning kind of came back into prevalence, and the anti-critical race theory and inclusive this and that. There's just a lot of push on the on that idea of library boards essentially censoring or restricting access to certain materials from children. And, you know, we saw an election between Stacey Rodriguez and incumbent Susan Shea. And it got pretty heated, to be honest.
Yeah, for the library board, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and normally you don't see a lot of attention for library board
elections. You never see much about a library board election, but this blew up and was a full-blown election, yeah.
Yeah, and Rodriguez, you know, she employed the same firm that Scott, that our Senator Scott Herndon used in his race against Jim Woodward, which is, you know, characterized by a lot of mudslinging and pamphlets through the mail that a lot of people were quite offended by. And I remember thinking at the time, why is a library board candidate being represented by a political firm? You know, I mean, these are people that usually just, you know them from down the street and they care about books and everything. They're not looking to change the entire organization of the library. And so as a result of that campaign, the voters, they chose the incumbent and Rodriguez, you know, she had a lot of extreme ideas. They didn't sit well with the voting public, and so you know, that kind of all just sort of settled. Mm-hmm. You know, you see such anger, and we even saw online death threats. They had the Sandpoint Library had to call the police in May and report having online death threats on the Rosebud group on Facebook, and you know, now you don't even really hear about that anymore. It's just one of those issues that we got really angry about and then we forgot about because there's other things to get angry about.
Yeah, if you're going to predict things for 2024, you might say it probably will pop up in some fashion again. But
probably.
So, okay. Well, hey, Evie, throw one at us.
Well, I mostly gave my four that I brought. I didn't. Oh, the geese are a good one.
There we go.
That was Lauren's idea. So the geese hunts at City Beach were fairly controversial. The city has been trying to find a way to manage a lot of geese that show up at City Beach and poop and spread E. coli, and they're trying to find a way to get rid of that. And so geese hunting became one of the solutions. I know they tried other solutions like dogs and I think sprays and certain things, but they ended up having people angry with the dog thing because I guess that got out of hand too, and some of the geese got killed by dogs. But I don't think there's a clear-cut solution to it, but I do know people, there's a good majority of people who are very angry with that solution.
Yeah, again, this is kind of an ongoing story. So they approved an actual goose hunt at City Beach, a city park, mm-hmm. and that got national news. It was bounced around like the city in Idaho has hunters at their city park.
Yeah, downtown.
That first hunt happened in January, and they killed one bird.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It was poorly
cold.
I mean, that's a bad idea because there weren't any geese around. You know, it was frozen, so the geese weren't hanging around. And then we got into the summer, and this story took on a whole new dimension because the city, without a lot of advance notice, approved, I think about 150 birds were captured and killed mm-hmm. to knock down the goose population. And that kicked off a lot of criticism. And I will say I was down at the beach maybe a week or two after that, and I counted 40 geese. So they repopulate pretty quickly. And then we got back into the fall, and there was another goose hunt. And do you guys have any kind of data on how many geese might have been taken during the fall goose hunt?
I actually would like to look into that. I don't have information. I know they were in November, I think. So they should know at this point if that was even mildly successful. But I don't have anything.
Yeah, I was just actually putting that on my list this morning. I'm like, how did that come out? I still haven't heard the results.
Yeah, and it's although I gotta say, even if they did end up, you know, bagging a lot of birds, it's hard to imagine how that's gonna change much that happens there next spring and summer in terms of the goose population.
Yeah, so I feel like it's like swatting mosquitoes in your campsite. You know, you're gonna feel like you're getting ahead of it, but you're not. I mean, they're gonna be there.
It's a serious issue. There's a lot of goose poop down. I go to the beach myself in the summer multiple times, and you got to watch where you're stepping, and it impairs the use of the big open lawns for people to throw footballs and frisbees and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there is a high amount of that that's polluting the swimming water too. So that'll be another story that continues in 2024. Ben, give us another one.
I think, you know, Schweitzer selling to Alterra was a pretty big story for a lot of skiers and snowboarders here in town. You know, we've had a local feel to our mountain for, you know, most of the time that I've skied there. I mean, I've skied there since I was in fourth grade, and I felt a little nostalgic when I heard that news, because I felt like, oh, there, here we go. You know, this is it. You know, Alterra, they own Mammoth, Steamboat, Big Bear, Deer Valley. You know, they own like 16 resorts around the country, and they're all very, you know, high dollar, big resorts. And, you know, they've got a lot of changes coming up. They got some, they got a new lift this year, the new parking area and a new staging area for the Bunny Hill.
And that was already in the works before Alterra purchased.
Yeah, definitely was. And so there's a lot of changes. There's going to be, you know, the gateway lot's going to eventually be condos, and, you know, we're going to see a lot of changes up there. And I think overall, people are hoping that they'll retain that local feel to the mountain, because, you know, we all kind of feel like we own that place a little bit. And I hope that they continue that. And so that's the worry, I think, with a lot of the skiers. And for the most part, I think they've kept the prices the same. They don't seem to be, you know, doing any big sweeping changes yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's coming.
Alterra came on board and said, hey, we're leaving all the management in place. And they did. They didn't change up anything that way. They do have the resources to probably market the resort out more than the Schweitzer has marketed in the past. It's going to be a kind of a wait and see to how the mountain is affected. I will say the local ownership of the mountain went away back in the mid 1990s.
Right.
So it's been owned by companies out of Seattle.
Right.
For many years, and it still is, you know, progressed along as a really great place for locals to be.
Having a tough beginning of the year this year, but, you know.
Oh, no kidding.
Hopefully we'll see some snow come soon.
Yeah, well, have you been down to do the check out the new chairlift?
Yeah. I went that one day. They got a good dump of snow, and, you know, it was interesting going across that little bridge and everything.
Yeah.
And they've done some cool things down there. I thought it was going to go even further down. I didn't know it was just literally right across the creek.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, there are some fun things coming at Schweitzer. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing my dances for snow right now, because I've only got one day in year. Mm-hmm. I think at this point I had 10 days last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Up to this point. I haven't even been up yet, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
It just kind of.
I found it really interesting. I reached out to Schweitzer once they announced that they were unlimiting their Icon Pass, which is what I think all Alterra-owned mountains have done. But they anticipated no real change in their, just their, like, population of people going up there and riding per day with the unlimiting of the Icon Pass. I know a lot of locals don't agree with that. And I think once we start seeing real snowfall up there, it's going to get a lot busier, because I have a friend from Vermont who drives across the country every year to get his 7 days in at Schweitzer with his Icon Pass. Mm-hmm. And now that it's unlimited, he's like, I'll be here for a month or two probably to ride the mountain. And I think a lot of people are going to do that. So I think it's going to get a lot busier up there once we start seeing real snowfall.
So the secret to happiness is ski midweek.
Yeah.
And you can avoid almost all the lines. Well, we are going to come up on the end of our time here pretty soon. But want to go around with one more quickie from each of us on what might have been a big story for the year?
Yeah, I think the elections in November in the city especially, I think that election where we're going to see a new mayor, Jeremy Grimm, and two new council members, Kyle Schreiber and Pam Duquette, along with incumbent Deb Rule, that election was It was a very polite election. I remember at the forum being impressed by how well everybody was treating one another. You know, you don't see that often when it comes to the legislative elections. But underneath that, you know, that polite conversation, there was, I feel like there was a referendum being discussed where the candidates who all won seemed to be the ones that were pushing back against the city administration model, the feeling of disconnection between the people and their city. And so I feel like we're going to see a pretty changed city in 2024.
Yeah, that's going to be, it's going to be interesting with the new mayor and a couple of new council people. I will say the thing really that struck me the most about the city election was all the uproar we had about Traverse Park and the downtown waterfront and unhappiness being vocalized so much. And yet only 35% of the registered voters in the city turned out to vote. So 2/3 of the people in town didn't even vote. It's like, what do you got to do to engage people? And, you know, and yet we'll see twice that turnout for the presidential election where your vote is you know, not going to make any difference at all, basically, because it's one of, you know, 150 million votes that are cast. So, yeah. Anyways, that's my beef about the city election. Do you want to give us another one, Evie, or and Lauren?
I think one kind of overarching theme in the city throughout the year, in a similar vein as the waterfront design competition, is the comp plan, which they are still kind of finalizing. They haven't completely finalized it yet because they're wanting to do some more public outreach, but that's been in the works for a while. I think COVID kind of derailed it for a bit. And it's been in need of a revision. So I think the city's looking forward to that. And I think that will be a big part of next year as well.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Lauren?
I think a really big one that we didn't touch on was the BCRCC's attempt to censure Commissioners Luke Aumit and Steve Bradshaw. And I don't know about all of you.
The Republican Central Committee,
yes. Yes. I don't know about all of you, but I was actually really shocked that they ended up voting against censorship. I thought it was going to be no contest
but,
there.
But they did censor Mark Souter, the representative Mark Souter, right? Mm-hmm. As I recall, yeah. Yes. So,
And he had a great line about that recently. He said, you know, I never had their support in the first place when I was running. I never had their support while I was in office, so... This, you know, essentially, doesn't, yeah. I'm paraphrasing here. This doesn't
business as usual, right?
Doesn't move the needle, you know.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, in our last 5 minutes or so here, let's do some predictions for 2024. Who wants to start out with what they think will be a pretty big story that people might want to pay attention to? Go ahead, Lauren.
I think I don't have any like direct predictions, but I think it would be a really good idea just to like keep an eye on the county, because I've heard a lot of things are going to be happening right after January 1st. Not a lot of details have come out about it yet, but I think that there are going to be some big things happening. So just keep your eye out, keep your ear out for things you're hearing.
Yeah.
Can I interject here? Just talking about the county. We've talked about the county and the fair board, and we kind of address them as two separate things, but they're very interrelated. I mean, the heart of the conflict at the county is over what's going to happen at the county fair, the county fairgrounds, and also what happened in the past with alleged financial malfeasance. Is that, would you say if that issue goes away, things smoothed over at the county, or is it this is just what they're grabbing onto right now, and these issues at the county are going to be ongoing no matter what?
I would say some things will get better if that should go away. I know there was a lot of tension between like Clerk Rosedale and the Fair Board for a lot of things that were said, and they seem to have worked some or all of that out for the time being. And I know that even just having a good conversation between the two has definitely calmed some things down, but I'm sure that'll get swept over really quickly by other problems that are happening.
Yeah. Ben, you think the same, or is it, you think the, if the fair issue is resolved, and I'm not sure it ever can be. I mean, you know, the investigation can never be fully concluded really with the,
it's, I feel like honestly, it's whack-a-mole. when that mole goes away, there's going to be something else for them to bash with their hammers. And it's an unfortunate grouping of people right now that are running the county business, because a lot of people are very on top of what they're doing, and they're the doing the work. And a lot of people are just kind of, you know, throwing sticks in the spokes. So yeah, I think it could ease some tensions, but it'll just open up more areas for further tension down the road.
Yeah.
There's, like I said, it's a storm, and it's not, this is just one isolated part of that storm. It doesn't, it's not the eye of it or anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, sorry to derail the conversation there. Evie, you were going to make a prediction about 2024, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything huge. I think obviously, very obviously, growth is going to continue happening, and that's going to keep changing how the council decides to move forward and how people decide where they want to spend the rest of their lives and things like that. But I think, I don't know, I think the growth will change even like our role as a journalist. I'm very new to the field, but I think small communities, I think people in small communities are even more passionate because they feel like they can make a greater impact. You know, people that live in places like New York or LA, they're not going to be really as involved because their voice is really going to be drowned out. But here, I think that'll be something that kind of, I don't know. I'm curious to see how public engagement reflects growth, you know? And so not a specific prediction, just an observation.
Mm-hmm. Ben. So many things to predict.
I know. Let me just put on my soothsayer's cap here. I think a couple of things, actually. I think we're going to see either a resignation or some amicable split between the administrator, city administrator Jennifer Stapleton, and the city of Sandpoint. I don't think that the incoming mayor and Jennifer are destined to be bosom buddies. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, I mean, she's already looked for other jobs before. She's already applied for other jobs before, essentially. And I think we're going to see the end of either that position or her specifically. I also think, you know, Jim Woodward announced he's running against Scott Hernan again, and I think he's going to win. I saw the performance that, you know, write-in candidate Steve Johnson had against Scott Hernan, and it was impressive for a write-in candidate mm-hmm. to have that many votes and that percentage of the vote. So I think Woodward might win that race with Hernan, but it's going to be an ugly, ugly race. And I think, like Lauren said, the county, we do need to watch the county in 2024 because there's going to be a lot going on. I don't think that the three commissioners sitting there are going to all be sitting there by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my prediction, yeah, would be the election's going to be, I don't know if I can't really call that horse race there that as you did, but there's going to be another testy election, I'm sure, for Mark Souter's seat, mm-hmm. probably. And Sage Dixon is not running again for the other representative seat, so that's going to be a pretty interesting, nobody's announced for that yet. So that's going to be an interesting race there to fill that seat. We could see a whole new legislative delegation here.
Yeah, and Steve Bradshaw has a challenger too on the county commissioner race. Right. I think Luke Ahmet's up again in 2024. He had the short term.
Yeah, and he's already said he's running again, I believe.
So we're gonna see a lot of the candidates against Bradshaw and Ahmet. We're gonna see a lot of them come out of the woodwork pretty mm-hmm. soon because mm-hmm. they're working on it.
Let's throw out one potential prediction is the open primaries initiative. I will boldly predict it'll get on the ballot. That's a grassroots campaign to get the initiative on the ballot. I can't really say whether or not I would predict it's going to win or not, because I'm sure that particularly the Republican Party will come out with a ton of advertising opposing it prior to the general election in November.
Yeah.
But I bet they get it onto the ballot.
I think they're at 50,000.
Yeah, they're halfway to the vote total they're trying to get, and they got to get that by, I think, April. Okay, I'm going to throw out one softball sort of prediction. I really think that we're going to see a banner year for our cultural organizations, for the Panada, the festival at Sandpoint. I bet it's going to have a really good season. Pondere Arts Council just moved into a really great new space on 2nd Avenue. And the Music Conservatory is doing great things. So I think we're going to have a rich cultural year. And it's good news. Those sorts of things actually help bring us all together, right? Because they're not political at all. And it's great when we have things that can, you know, go to our common ground that we have, which is we have a lot more of it than we might think.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say thanks to Ben Olson from The Reader and Evie Seberg and Lauren Reichenbach from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Thank you guys all for coming in to give us some insights on the year that was and maybe even the year to come.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.